ways to be able to use disabilities to your advantage. Being diagnosed as bipolar, it's a disability. I'm not sitting here like, whoa me, you know, life sucks. Yeah, yeah, I'm so depressed all the time. I could.
Yeah, you figure out how to overcome the victim
mentality. Yeah, I can be a victim of this situation, or I can really take grasp of my destiny.
Well, thank you everyone for joining in. This is another episode with Benj and Sailor. And again, Sailor isn't here. Sailor has actually met Chris before. Mm-hmm. So this is my first time meeting him. We're excited to have him. So we have Chris Craze on the podcast with us today. We're going to be talking to him a little bit about, you know, what he's doing. So let's jump right into it.
Yeah.
What keeps you going?
What keeps me going? Well, first, thanks for having me on here. I want to, you know, always show gratitude for that up front, because I know it's time. And ultimately, you know, it's the people that are listening, watching, wherever they're at. Thank you guys as well. I'll try to make this as impactful as possible. You know, my story, it's not a rags to riches story, but there's a lot of death that's involved in it and a lot of nefarious activities. You know, I've been interviewed before, and, you know, a lot of this, I would hold back on it, but there's no point of holding back on a story, because story is our method of communication. As the marketing, you know, person that I am, and owning multiple companies that are successful because of marketing, you know, the thing is stories are forms of communication.
Exactly.
And everybody that talks, they have a story to go along with it. So I said, you know, I'm doing myself a disservice, but I'm more so doing everybody else a disservice by not
tell
sharing
the full story.
Yeah, by making it a PG-13 versus a rated R. Not in that aspect, but you know, early on, I think, you know, as a kid, my dad passed away at 13 from cancer. So right off the bat, you know, it's kind of like, how are you going to handle that as a kid? And early on, it was, am I going to sit in my sorrows? Am I going to, you know, how am I going to handle this? And when that happened, it was like, okay, like I'm an adult now, like I have to fend for myself. And God bless my mom. I love my mom. I have a really good communication with my mom now, and relationship with her. You know, it wasn't like that back then, because she's still trying to be a mom and she's trying to do what's best for me. She's trying to, you know, you need to be in at 10 o'clock. You can't be out after the street lights go off. And I grew up in a bad part of outside of Los Angeles, Lancaster, Palmdale, Afro Man, the famous Palmdale.
How many siblings did you have?
One brother.
Okay. One brother.
And jump in, and I'll kind of skip scat around, but it formed the whole story.
Okay.
My brother to date right now is a paranoid schizophrenic, and he's homeless, and he's 3 years younger than me. And so out of the draw, it's not a lucky side. It was just, if there was a draw for one of us to have something and the other to have something, unfortunately, you know, he was the result of a doctor that got imprisonment and got his license barred in San Diego, one of seven doctors. So it's an unfortunate circumstance, but you know, there's a lot of guilt that's kind of there, that like, I wasn't there for him. I always chose business. I went to business. But tying this back into like what drives me, it was, business has never effed me. Like business, and this is, I could go at this for so many ways. There's things that have happened in business. I've been sued. I've sued. I've had audits. I've had EDD audits. I have a team of lawyers. It comes with business. You know, the more popular you get, the more notoriety you get, the more business you do, the more transactions, it's going to have these things. It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. Things happen. There are bad people that are out there in business that will use all the channels of business to try to do whatever they can. It's how you navigate it. It's how you handle it. I mean, I could go into so many stories, probably many podcasts down the road on that. Why I got audited by the IRS, you know, sending $500K to China from Western Union. You know, I just didn't know. It was a faster route than going through the bank. So things like that. But with that said, you know, going into this and losing my dad, I remember my dad saying, hey, you know, the one thing that's going to happen in life is you're going to lose friends. And really what he was saying at that time was like, you're going to lose me. And that was something that, I'm a 13-year-old kid. You know, how does that really impact you? I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. You know, like, it's, life's going to go on. I just want to go hang out with my friends. And that's what I did. And then the day happened and that happened. And it was a kick to the fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Ironic enough, that was, that hurt. And so at that point, it was always like, selling the weed in the neighborhood. I resorted to doing every drug in the book multiple times a day, kind of at the same time. And that was not the best decision. I think that I made it through that. And I don't wish that on anybody, but I just didn't know how to cope with that. Yeah. That was like, I was lost.
Yeah.
And I ended up going into the military academy.
Wow.
And so 6 months of like Marine Force Recon, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, retirees or reserves. And it was 6 months of just, taken and then put into this academy. And it was like, it was intense. And that formed like... That put responsibility into me, and that kind of took like that kid mentality of like, I know everything, I can do everything, and really like gave me a dose of my own medicine. And taking that and running with it, I had some charges that still lingered. And they said, look, if you go into the military, we'll wipe your record. And I was actually part of a program back then where you go into the Navy or any branch and they completely wipe your record at that point. And so I joined for 6 years. I got out after four for a medical discharge. Being in the military, thank everybody for their service, but the military is regimented and it's regimented for a reason. And if you're a creative person, there's going to be that creativity where you're like, I can't be creative. They didn't like the fact that I DJ'd a lot. Gotcha. And playing music. So instead of DJing clubs, I just started DJing, weddings and private events, and still did clubs. They just didn't know it.
Yeah. So the military told you to stop DJing clubs.
They didn't like it.
They were strict.
And the thing is, I get it. I understand why. I'm a people's person. And, there's like with managers and businesses, you're either going to be the company's manager or the employee's manager. And I was like the employee's manager, because it was like I was the one. I just went deep on communication, neurolinguistics, body language, communication, conflict resolution. And I could do nothing because I was on limited duty. I had a foot surgery that like I couldn't do a lot of things in the military. The way the military looked at it is they said, look, you're broke, whatever you want to fill in the blank. You can't do your normal job. We're just going to end up kicking you out. And that was hard because I excel at everything. I got first in my class to get orders. I got straight A's in school. I graduated all three ways that you can graduate in California, the GED, the Chesapeake, and normal credits. And it was a luck situation that I turned a bad situation into a positive by going to that academy. And that lended the opportunity. Well, anyways, I started getting this entrepreneurial, mindset. I didn't know what that was. I just said, I want to work for myself, because every time that I would work for somebody else, I felt like there was constrictions and there was like confines to like what I'm doing.
They were restricting what you wanted to do.
They were restricting it. And even more so in a case in point, like the military, they're like, go sweep this over here. And this is how you sweep it. And I'm like, okay. So I swept it that one way. Then the next day I come in and I have to do the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, as long as the job gets done, if I do it my method and my method's faster, then I have time to go do something else and I can collapse time.
Yeah.
And so the sense of time and urgency and being efficient and proficient at doing something, that was part of my demise in the military, is they don't want that. Because, if you're my boss and you tell me to do this, but I thought of a faster, better, more efficient way of doing it, then they come in and go, you're not listening to what I'm telling you. And they look at it as like, you're challenging me. And it's a two-part, because sometimes bosses want to see that in the military or in any, and this doesn't go to the military, this is even in the job world. They don't want to see that because now you're outshining them. But it's a fine balance. If there's a kid with an ego that's doing it 100%, but if it's not an ego and it's like, hey, I'm literally doing this because I want to get done with this and I want to be efficient because I understand there's dollars, there's time.
Time is literally the main cost of a business.
Time is the main cost of the business. And so I ran into that a lot. And then eventually I got involved. I got out of the military. And I got involved in businesses that that worked with cartels, dealing drugs, selling a lot of cocaine. And I don't say that as a proud person to say that. I say that because that was a stepping stone into what I'm doing now. And this is the part of the story that I used to tell people, hey, do you want the PG version or do you want the rated R? And now it's just, I've condensed it and I'm like, here's what it is, whether you like it or not. And, you know, and it went from small bags to like, well, if I work my way up and I get a larger amount, I can make more money. And it was purely a business decision. And there's a lot of risk, obviously, that goes involved with it. I put a lot of money away for a lawyer, which I used that money and the lawyer got me out of a lot of stuff. I don't do that anymore. I'm not involved in that anymore. But what ended up happening is when I went to court for it, I'm summarizing a lot of this. The judge said, look, you know, you cannot step foot in a place that sells alcohol as the main point of sale for the next 10 years. So I became an embargo DJ. And I said, well, that's what I do. Doesn't matter. You know, the judge wanted me to go to like some Casa by the Sea, $90,000 a month rehab. I ended up going to the VA. Rehab's rehab.
Yeah.
And the judge can't mandate what is going on medically. And
it was 90,000 a month.
90,000. And they knew, you know, when I got caught, the story of when I got caught, it was driving a white van with black rims and green police lights on it that looked like a border patrol van with San Diego jail pants. And I was actually getting rid of my entire stash. I had like GHB, I had ecstasy, I had cocaine, I had all of it. And I was getting rid of it. Because the girl that I'm with now, who's my wife, you know, we had started dating. She goes, you know, do not drive tonight. I had just got off of probation for a year probation of having a little bit in my pocket, getting found with a little bit in my pocket the year before. And I went to court. They said, hey, well, wipe your record. You go to this Prop 36, whatever, California. I think that's the name. But you get clean and you go to these classes and then you're done. And I got off that morning, that Friday morning, I got off that all those charges. And so they said, OK, now you're off. Now you have to be clean for, you know, you can't do the DJ thing. You can't do this and that. Or sorry, that wasn't that. That was before, you know, this was the first charge that I got busted with. And I was freaking out because normally what they do is they wait 24 hours, 48 hours, and then they come raid you. And then it's bam, put you right back in the system. Not normally, it could happen. So I freaked out. I got rid of all my stuff. My now wife at that time was a girl I was just seeing. She goes, do not drive tonight. Do not do this. That's the stupidest thing you can do. I was an idiot. I did it anyways. And then here I am. I got caught. And so she's getting a phone call a couple hours later, like, hey, Chris is in jail. He's not going to get out for a while. It was a significant amount. But case in point, this builds up to like, you know, getting a second chance at life. The judge wanted to punish me because he knew that I was not using it, which was on the record. He knew that there was a lot more involved. So let's drain this dude's bank account. I ended up going to the VA. That was kind of like a get out of jail free card. The VA said, hey, you know, you can do outpatient rehab on this. And so I did. And that pissed the judge off. So then he says 10 years, no nightclubs, no place with alcohol. So then I started DJing weddings. And this is where the entrepreneur really kicked in. Because weddings, it's going from making $300 a night at a club and getting drunk and taking girls home and just all the stupidness that comes with it. You're driving yourself, so you're putting yourself at risk every single night, to DJing a wedding where you're, you know, I'm charging $1,500 to $3,500. And that's pure profit. I'm just dedicating 6 hours of my time, you know, and maybe two consulting sessions. And so I really picked up the weddings, marketed heavy on the weddings, started doing 30, 40 of those a year or more, worked with two other companies. And really, I say that with the two companies because these companies were rivals. And so my business sense and just the formality of how you should handle business. And some people have it. Some people don't. Some people learn it. But I think like the drive of like, I want the next wedding. I want the next event. I want to do the next thing. Then being crushed of like, you know, here's these confines. Some of the weddings I had to turn down because alcohol was the main point of sale. Some of the venues I got, you know, I did after parties for Grammys, Oscars, like significant events.
So and you were obedient to the judge.
I was obedient.
You listened to that for those 10 years.
I did.
How hard was that?
That was extremely hard. And that I made a conscious decision at that time, five years of no contact with anybody that like did any of those substances. Like, I didn't change my phone number, but I just disavowed anybody to contact me, and I did not contact anybody back that was in that industry. Obviously, I had two phones when I was doing it, but you know, I really got serious with my girl at that time, who's now my wife. Listened to her, you know, we ended up just drinking and watching movies and doing like what they said was like the lame stuff, you know, like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday that like I had to go out, I had to like do all this stuff. I'm like, I don't care about any of that, you know. And I had a place right above San Diego Airport that looked over the airport and the street. And that's where I formed my business. My first business that really catapulted everything. And it was, the company name is Cryo Effects. We do special effects for, I mean, a plethora of Fortune 500 companies and brands that everybody knows. And it can be anything from design to manufacture to products. And it's a very specific niche, but it was an industry that was a very rudimentary industry. So websites weren't up to date. Sales weren't up to date, like marketing wasn't up to date. And so I went to an event and a friend of mine had one of these cryo guns that the DJ sprayed the fog out of. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, oh, it's a cryo gun. And he's like, I'm like, dude, I could make that thing. How much was it? And he's like, oh, you can't make it, dude. It's like $900. And I'm thinking, dude, you got ripped off from that. That's like a pressure washer handle with a nozzle on it. You know, it's a lot more than that because of the pressures and temperatures. But I ended up making some, sold some of them on Craigslist. You know, two of them, I was able to make four, able to make nine, able. And then I did like grassroots marketing, you know, like 1,000 Craigslist ads a day, 1,000 back page ads a day, Kijiji, Gumtree, like just, and then people wanted more. More than just the cryo gun. They wanted, you know, this next product and that product and CO2. And now to date, you know, we've been in business 11 years with this company, and the company does $1 million or more in sales. I branched it off into two other companies, design and services. And actually the hotel that we're at right now filming this is one of my highlight projects. I'm the manufacturer, designer, and installer for the special effects system at the Fountain Blue.
Well, you're doing all of it here.
All of it. So for nightclub and day club. So anything from like what you see in the nightclub and the day club, like from like the fog, the haze, not the lights. Sometimes we do lights. I did not do the lights. That was SJ Lighting that did that. And then Sound Investments did the audio, but the piping systems, the CO2 that sprays out. I mean, the stuff that makes it in like every video.
That's so cool. So you could bring someone in front of a stage and you could make their entrance look so good.
Insane. Like NFL entrances that you guys see. I've designed a lot of those. I can't say all of them. There are two or three other companies, but you know what it boils down to is just the drive behind the person to make things work and to say that can be done. You know, early on, it's intimidating coming into an industry, and I'm a marketing expert by trade. And I say that with a reservation, because when somebody says an expert, don't get me wrong that I'm like, oh, I'm an expert. I've reached my pinnacle. Like, I'm always a student and I'm always inquiring about the next. And I'm always a student by trade. I just love learning. And I think everybody should. And I say that because when some people say, hey, I'm an expert, like, it's like they've hung up the towel. Like, yeah, I'm an expert. I don't need to learn anymore. Their markets evolve, industries evolve, and learning more and more and more. I came into an industry that there's people that knew more about me or more about the industry than I did. And I just said, okay, well, I want to sell this cryo gun. It's not being sold. Like, I would call people. I have to call five companies to find out what tank do I need? What accessories do I need? How do I know how it works? How do I do this? How do I do that? And I said, if I have these questions, everybody else that wants one of these products has the same questions or more. So how do I stop those questions from happening, or actually not even stop them from happening? How do I answer them before the person even makes a sale? And that's what I did. You know, I put information up. I put an image up that had like the cryo cannon in it. It had the washers, it had the hose, it had the manual. Like, what you see on this image, when you buy this, this is exactly what comes in the box when you get it in the mail. And because of that, everybody else started doing the same thing in the industry. So much so, even the Chinese started doing it. And it's not a pat on the back. The Chinese copy a lot of stuff, which they do a good job at it. And sometimes they make better products at it. The Chinese, you know, they know, hey, it's assembly lines and manufacturing and warehousing, like that's taught in their education systems. Whereas that's not taught here with ours in the US. Mm-hmm. But the drive behind it knowing, hey, I can do that. I mean, if you would have told me 10 years, 15 years ago, hey, you'd be doing the Fountain Blue or you'd be doing Tao Beach, which was the biggest club before this, I would have said you're crazy. But there's a little bit of me that said, well, if that's what you think I can do, then I'm going to go do it. And a lot of that, it's the drive, relating it back to, like, lost my dad. I lost 10 best friends throughout the years that, you know, car accidents, overdoses, found in a bathtub a couple days later, you know, hanging in a garage. It, like, I mean, each one of these things was like ripping the scab back off. And what kind of hurt was, like, some of them, their girls would say, hey, all so-and-so wanted to do is hang out with you, but you just worked. Like, you literally worked. And now you can't get that time back. And so I say it's a setback slingshot. And there's a book that I'm writing called Setback Slingshots, that you take a setback and use it to slingshot yourself ahead. But the problem is with that is there's sacrifices. And as any entrepreneur knows, there's going to be sacrifices that are made. And so, you know, working through holidays, working through New Year's, doing events. I mean, those are sacrifices I've made, like, with my wife. And, you know, we are going to have kids soon. And I'm actively working to how do I get to manage this? And it's just the different levels of business. If I put a manager in, now I don't have to be doing this all the time. You know, before, we didn't have the capacity to have a manager. And don't get me wrong, I made a lot of mistakes. You know, I mean, we had in one of my companies, this CryoFX one I'm talking about, we had, you know, 10, 11 people working. And I thought I needed an office. I needed to answer phones. I needed to have a presence. I needed a place where people can go. I needed to be open all hours. I needed to work 18 hours a day. I needed to do all this. Like, it's interesting because all of that is 100% reversed right now. And I have, you know, 4 people that work for me that are VAs. So I'm not paying, you know, the local taxes and all that because they're not even in the U.S. And so that's all different. The phone systems, we have videos that answer questions online for people. It's just, things are all different. But what comes into it is the person behind all of this and the want to keep going. And, like, what's next? It's always what's next. And so to date, you know, I have a portfolio of companies, a marketing agency, publishing company, you know, this CryoFX brand. I have 3 companies in it. I have two competing brands in the industry. So we run the gamut of customers from high to low. And then we have a couple of other companies as well that do different things. I mean, one of the companies purely based on marketing was 3 hours from concept to logo to 10 page website. And it's done 1 million in sales. And that was, it was a fluke thing because it was sanitizer dispensers and dispenser stands.
That's awesome.
Sell people shovels while there's, you know, some digging to be done.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I don't know, man, the drive behind me, it's a lot of people ask where it comes from.
And it's hard to get.
It's hard to get.
It's not, I believe that drive you have, mm-hmm. it's not something that just happens out of thin air.
No.
You have to create the drive. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, some people are born with it.
Yeah.
Or some people are, but there's some people who want to have it mm-hmm. and you can gain the skills. Mm-hmm. It's like becoming a professional at any career. Mm-hmm. You practice and you can get the drive to be able to work and make those sacrifices that you have made mm-hmm. to be able to get to where you are now.
And it's kind of like that 10,000 hour rule, you know, like anybody, I've talked to people and as a business coach, 10X business coach, but also a marketing business coach, non-related to Grant Cardone stuff. I've talked to people that like somebody expertise in flowers. Like, they like flowers. They learned what it took to run a flower shop and they became an expert in flowers and they have a thriving flower business because of that. And so it literally comes down to, you know, I'll say 2 things here is 1, the drive behind it. A lot of people are easy to say, that's going to be hard. What's the shortcut? How do I get there faster? You got, the more you know something, you speak from conviction on it and you know it. And so it's easier to sell a product like that. And so my staff, I put them through using my products. I put them on events. I put them so that way when they're on the phone and they're selling a product, they're not talking about, you know, some information they read online and they're selling it. They're talking from their experience and them knowing it. And that conviction, you can't fake that. You know, people know when somebody's just like reciting something and it's easier to sell. The easier it is to sell something by using it or doing it or being a product of it, the easier it is. The second thing I'll say is, you know, there's a lot of people that go into the, like, what am I classified in the medical terms? In Western medicine, it's what do you fit into? And I know you guys that are listening are probably, you're like, where is this coming from? This is actually a good point, and I've been real vocal on this lately, is, you know, I was diagnosed as bipolar early on. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh my God, like, that sucks. Like, I had girlfriends that were bipolar. And, you know, people use that in the wrong terminology. Oh my God, you're bipolar, you're crazy, you're out there because you switch one minute and the next. Yes, that can be a facet of it, but it's a whole different meaning than what it's implied to be. I say that when I heard about that, I was like, that sucks. But in being bipolar and being manic 90% of the time, I've taken that, and that's a lot of my drive too. I don't want to be on meds. You know, people are probably look like, this guy's animated, he's all over the place. I mean, this is me, you know, 90% of the time, because I'm 90% manic. There are depressions. I know when I'm going in that. I've looked at the pattern and I've said, okay, you know, I'm going into a depression now. Let me start learning something new. Let me learn something and start watching this, and it pulls me out of a depression. So I've looked at the pattern and I've been able to pull myself out. Not everybody has that, but I say that as being vocal for the people that want to self-diagnose or abide by diagnosis from doctors. You know, there's a big world out there. Western medicine is all about diagnoses. And so there are ways to be able to use disabilities to your advantage. And that's a disability. Being diagnosed as bipolar, it's a disability. I use it to my advantage, and I like speaking out about it because I'm not sitting here like, woe me, you know, life sucks. Yeah, yeah, I'm so depressed all the time. I could.
Yeah. You figure out how to overcome the victim.
Yeah. And if somebody can hear my story and be like, that guy does it, you know, like, that's all it takes. It's just one person to hear something and say, look, like, that guy can do it.
Yeah. I've thought a lot about that, about, like, you know, people with autism, mm-hmm. who are so much smarter than other people. Mm-hmm. That's like a superpower.
It is.
It's like a God-given gift for you to just be insanely intelligent. Mm-hmm. And people look at it, oh, you know, he has autism. He has a superpower.
I'd be telling the world, hey, yeah. You got autism right here. You're talking to a genius.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You know, same with you. You're able to take that and learn from it and use it positive. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's probably really hard to be able to change your mindset with that, because those hundreds of people, thousands of people out there struggling with that.
It is.
But all they need to hear is someone who has changed it and literally been like, I'm going to take this and I'm going to use it to my advantage and go up with it.
Yeah. Right. And I think that, you know, if they just hear, like, they hear, it's that one person, you know, one person does it, another person changes because they heard it, and then somebody else. And, you know, I think looking back, you know, I was on the meds in the military, going through the foot surgery that I had and everything else. I was on the meds. I had a lot of meds going on, and I just stopped. I stopped everything. I don't recommend that. But I said, look, I can be a victim of this situation, or I can really take grasp of, like, my destiny and want to, like, change that. And I know that sounds like big think, but that's, like, it has to be on a micro level first. And the micro decisions, the micro thought processes lead to more thoughts about it, more resonating thoughts, more ideas, and ultimately lead into actions of being able to do that. And that goes on with anybody. Like, that's why I'd say, coming back to where we were just at, you know, 10, 15 minutes ago in the conversation, anybody that wants to do anything, I literally was thinking about this on the drive back from Arizona today. I said, there's so many ways to make money. There's so many ways to make an impact. There's so many ways to do better in this world or change an industry for the better. They just have to be thought about. And that's where it starts, because there's literally so many things. I mean, somebody that wants to get into making furniture, I say that because I'm looking at this table.
Yeah.
You know, somebody could be like, oh, there's so many furniture companies. Like, I'm not going to do it because there's so many out there. If you just have a little bit of a uniqueness to you, that you come in as an outlier to a furniture company. Elon Musk was an outlier to the automobile industry. You know, you make a better table, you make it more efficient, you make it faster, you make it do something that something else doesn't. You know, I mean, and that's how products are made. Anything can happen. And anybody that dedicates enough time to learning about it, you know, touching on that, I think I went somewhere else in the conversation, but that place that I got in San Diego that looked over the San Diego airport and the traffic, for a year and a half straight, I learned about CO2. I learned, and this was how I started my company, that CryoGun spray CO2. And I said, I want to learn about this. So how does the cryo gun work? What hose do I need? What pressures are involved? How does CO2 work? Like, I literally spent a year researching while I sold these things. And what drove me, ironically enough, probably other than my bipolar, was watching this traffic and hearing the airplanes come down. You know, you had a noiseless period, I should say, of the least amount of noise between like 11 p.m., 12 o'clock at night, and like 4 or 5 in the morning. And when that noise receded, I should say, is when I got the most of my studying in, because I left the window open and I watched the cars on the freeway, and I felt every other time like the world is moving by me, and if I'm not doing something right now, somebody else is going to do it. And so that fueled, again, using the environment, that fueled my thought process. I'm like, the airplanes are coming in nonstop. People are on the move. People in traffic are right in front of me. These cars are moving on the freeway. Like, this world is moving. And if I'm doing nothing, the world's going to pass me by, which lends way to a famous saying that I tell a lot of people. And it's, there's people that watch things happen. There's people that make things happen. And there's people that wonder what happen.
That's a good one.
And I would feel like I'm in that, like, wondering what's going on. I'm like, God, these people are on planes. Where are they going? What are they doing? They're in traffic. Like, where are these cars going? Where's every single person going to? Like, maybe it's a job. Maybe they're going to a meeting. Maybe. And it was like, that's what fueled me. And so now living in Vegas, it's kind of the same thing. Like, Vegas is a very liquid place on the strip for the most part. But it's also a very rich place in development right now. There's construction on every corner. So using, I think, the resources, I mean, that's what helped me. I know I was kind of like all over with a lot of this, but each one of these is what really attributed to like the drive in wanting to do more. Yeah. And anytime somebody told me no, anytime somebody told me you can't do it, I'm like, dude, I'm gonna figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
And as long as you're working within the confines of safety, of insurance, of the law, of, you know, the ability of the products that you're using, you know, every single thing, metals, plastics, valves, anything, there's parameters. And when you work within these, the box is open. I mean, it's really thinking outside the box on what can be done.
Yeah. So I have a good question for you.
Yeah.
When you were in your apartment, or was it a house you owned, apartment?
It was an apartment at the time.
You were in an apartment. Mm-hmm. And you're studying CO2 for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. That goes along the topic of, there's a lot of people out there who want to start a business.
Yeah.
But the problem is they work a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. They don't have savings. You know, how did you do it? How did you just work for a year and a half? You know, what money did you have coming in? Were you working a job? And for people who want to start a business, mm-hmm. don't have the capital, how do you create the time? Because if you're going to start a business, especially if you're going to launch a product, you need a good 6 months to a year mm-hmm. plus capital to be able to do it. What would you recommend for people who want to do this? How do they make money while they do it? How do they pay their bills?
There's two parts of that. To answer your question, so when I was doing this research and studying, I worked for a company called Freeman, and they're the guys that do all the trade show conventions. They load your stuff in, they load it out, they move around, and it was manual labor. And I'll tell you, the culture shock on that, just this, the life shock of going from, you know, doing 3 or 4 sales a month of kilos of cocaine to, you know, working a $15 an hour job. I mean, it's like getting kicked in the face over and over and over. But it's, the thing is it's not a bad thing, because sometimes you need to have something. And I say this, sometimes I need to, everybody needs to, you have to have something taken away for you to really realize, like, wow, I had it good. Like, I need that back. And so, you know, now I have businesses that will pay that. I don't have to sell things anymore, but it's, you want to get back to where you're comfortable. And so having something taken away, like, I had that taken away, and every day I'm going in and I'm going, two things. I'm going, what is the ratio of my work to the output that I'm getting every day? And I still think about this. I'm huge on this. What's the ratio? You know, what are your talents? What are my talents? What are your talents? Everybody's talents. What are your talents? You have a ratio that goes in and what you're getting paid out. for instance, marketing. I've always marketed my own companies. Now, if I sold, you know, and this was years ago that I thought this, well, if I sold marketing to other companies, I'm getting a bigger ratio. I'm not having to do the work. I'm not on the hook for more staff, more processes, more transactions, more anything like that. I'm just consulting on that. And so one the many. And so the ratio got better. There's other industries where now the marketing efforts are even better. You know, marketing for real estate, marketing for loans, marketing for other things. The payout is a lot based. So it's, and I'm just showing this as an example because everybody has a trait and a characteristic and something that they're good at. And so to answer the second question on, you know, what would somebody do if they have a 9-to-5? I always envied security guards, and I was a security guard for many years, but I envied, these are the positions that I envied early on because I think that they're prime positions. And it's not just a couple that I'm going to name, but it's anything that fits this avatar, if you will. It's a security guard that works night shift overnight. You have nothing to do except watch some property. Now, don't get me wrong on this. Keeping in mind, still doing your duty, you're watching the property, but you have a complete 8 hours that you could technically do another job while you're doing that. Double your income right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Now, this could be something like freelance work or consulting or something online. You are taken away from what you're doing, but if you're able to still watch the property that you're watching or sit at the front desk, sitting at the front desk at a hotel. You know, half the time I see these people lollygagging on Angry Birds or something else, and I'm just thinking, man, you have, and I hate when I say this, but I really mean it here when people, oh, you have no idea. I hate that term, but I'm going to say it because I really mean it. But I think you have no idea of the opportunity that's sitting in front of you. You know, you have 8 hours that you're sitting here where there's minimal transactions that you could be learning a new trait, expertising in something, if that's even a word, being an expert in something, learning more about something.
So let me ask you this. So you did that. You were a security guard.
So I was a security guard, but I didn't do that because I did security guard day shift. I was actually an undercover agent, undercover detective for Sears and Target. Nice. And so what that does is you work for corporate and you go in and everybody in the business in the store is under investigation. So even the security guys that are the loss prevention at the store, I'm watching them and I'm making sure that the shrink's not happening with them, turning cameras, taking product, altering reports. And so I'm basically a mole for corporate in that store. And that's ironically enough where I met my wife is in Sears.
Oh, nice.
But I liked it. It was cool. It was fun. But it's an involved position. Like yeah. I'm on when I'm on. And so that's why I say I envied those people because when I would go to hotels, I would see people sitting at the desk and they're not.
So do you think as a business owner, mm-hmm. right? If you walked in and you have an employee whose their job is to sit there at the desk, right? Mm-hmm. And answer phone calls. So if they don't have phone calls and not doing the desk, would you be mad at them if they were playing a game or reading a book or even studying a new trait? Would you be furious for them to be improving themselves? Obviously, if they were playing a game, you'd be like, hey, why are you wasting my time?
Yeah.
But if they were working another job, how would that make you feel?
And this is me as a client?
No, as an owner.
As a business owner.
If you own the thing.
I would actually say I would promote that.
Hmm.
I would promote it. And I know that it's walking a fine line because they have duties and responsibilities to check in the people or watch the building or do something else. But, you know, I would say, look, I would get mad. The problem is we're in a day and age where you don't know what they're doing. You know, you let them use the phone, they're going to be doing anything that could be on the phone. But I mean, this would probably be a rule. And I'm sure there's going to be people out there that disagree with me or have some comment to make about this. But I would say, look, you could be on the phone only if you're improving yourself. And that does not involve games. Or provide them an iPad that blocks everything except certain websites where they want to learn more information. I mean, there's plenty. One of my best friends, my childhood friend growing up, his brother ended up getting a master's degree while he did overnight security guard.
That's magnificent.
Literally got paid to do security while he got his master's degree and took classes online. And he's an exception to the norm, because the norm is, I'm bored, this sucks, I'm going to go to sleep.
I can sit there.
You know, I got 8 hours and I'm just going to do whatever, talk on the phone. And I just think of that and I'm like, man, like that opportunity to be able to improve yourself or do something. I mean, there's so many opportunities to take that with what it is. I would promote it at my businesses.
So that's the biggest thing with being an entrepreneur is you no longer see time as to waste. Mm-hmm. You see time as the most precious thing mm-hmm. in the entire world.
And yeah.
every second of every day counts towards mm-hmm. who you're becoming mm-hmm. and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And so it's easy for you to be able to look at these people like this, but there's a lot of people out there who don't have these ideas. Mm-hmm. It's like you mentioned earlier, we're all limited based upon what we can think,
yeah.
what we can come up with. Mm-hmm. So the security guards, they probably never even thought that. Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, it's easy to say, I mean, everybody has their view and their worldview, their parameters, like their experience and what they know. And you don't know what you don't know. And until you see somebody else doing it, or until you see it's possible, until you hear it, or until something comes along, normally until something comes along to agitate you enough to not want to be in your current position that you want to change to a new position. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that it has to be like that. Mm-hmm. I think even more so for the new generation. I don't like saying a generation class, but you know, the new generation of, you know, a lot more people are on their phones, a lot more this fallacy of like, I look at an Instagram profile and I'm talking third person and oh my God, this person's got it made. You know, they were like this one day and then they came into this and now everything's great and they got the job or the cars or whatever. And listen, if people put on their Instagram what it took to get there and what everyday life is like to maintain it, people wouldn't want to watch the Instagrams.
They wouldn't want to become those people.
They wouldn't want to become those people.
They wouldn't be jealous anymore.
Yeah, because what we're doing is we're seeing, you know, and I'm even a victim of this as well as a marketer. You know, I went on for a while and I would see, there was a case, I like doing A-B testing. So there was a test that I did and I said, okay, I'm going to cut all social media out for 4 weeks. I cut it out and my mentality improved, my mood improved, my well-being. Obviously I got time back, but then I had to go back into it and I had to look at it and I had to, like, cause I was reviewing ads and I had to do other stuff and I had to look at what competitors were doing. So I'm watching competitors' ads and then I'm looking at their profiles and it's like, I'm even a victim of it as well. I couldn't help but say, oh wow. Wow, that guy's got the life, man. Look at that. He's on vacation. You know, he's got the car. It's like, and it's easy to fall into that. At the same token, I have known people that have come up from nothing to something and everything was 100% fake. Rented the cars, rented the houses. You know, everything was a rental. The jewelry was a rental. The wardrobes were rentals. It was all 110% fake. But everybody else thought it was 100% real. And they ended up getting a status from it. Now they're able to live that life. I don't agree with that.
I faked everything.
I mean, literally, and we're in a day and age that everything can be faked. Photos can be faked, Photoshop.
Yeah, everything can be Photoshopped.
Yeah, and so I that's kind of a principle, if you will, if I had any principles, it's like, and I live by these principles, it's like, don't question everything that you see, which is good. I mean, we're a society now that questions everything. I'm not bringing politics into it, but just mentioning the name of it. You know, we question everything now. This is the most doubtful place in society that we have ever been as a society. And there's two things. It's good and it's bad. It's good because we have to question everything. Is something a fraud? Is it spam? Is it scam? Is it, you know, what are my results? You know, it's not just a disclaimer on the bottom of an email now. I have to have a whole dedicated page. On some of my websites, you know, is so-and-so a scam? Because that's going to be searched. So why not own it? Why not control the narrative? The news agencies are doing it already. And so why not control that narrative, which goes, marketing, there's a lot more marketing needed now than there is, than there has ever been, because of the doubt that's in society on something, and which is good, because people knowing their craft, being an expert at their craft, it's not just what's going to cut it now. And the more of an expert you are, people are going to read through these lines. You know, they know, hey, is this person talking from conviction? Like, do they know what they're talking about? Or is just some other guy that, you know, put some videos up and stuff like that. Doing podcasts like this are this is like raw and uncut, you know? So it's like people get the raw and uncut, answering questions on the fly. You know, how many, a lot of these gurus that are out there, put them on a podcast, drill them with the questions, you know, yeah. Do they, unless it's a pre-frame, and this goes back into communication, it's like somebody, everybody has their comfortability. It comes back to that comfortable zone. You know, what's your comfortable zone that you're in? What's needed to get you out of comfortable zone? The thought process and patterns and the speech patterns also say the same thing with people as well. You know, what's their comfortable speech pattern? What's their schick that they go into? And then you ask a question and that's off the path. How do they answer the question? You know, are they actually answering it? Are they delaying it? Is there deflection that goes into it? You know, do they like rambling like me?
Yeah, there's a lot of fake out there. Mm-hmm. And it's destroying, you know, the upcoming generation.
It
you know,
is.
My wife has a little cousin who I think she's like 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And before she was like even 2 years old, before she was even talking, you know, she knew how to like take pictures on a phone. Mm. You know, it's crazy. I mean, they can control phones nowadays.
Yeah.
And even my daughter, because Sailor and I have a daughter from you know, 6 months, mm-hmm. you put up a phone and a toy, she looks at the phone.
Yeah, they want the phone.
They want the phone. They're so interested in the phone.
Yeah.
It's crazy how it's designed like that.
It is. And it's, I think it's that, you know, they want that adrenaline. The adrenaline, the endorphins kicking in. It's that, you know, the quick result. You know, and a lot of people talk about that is like, results are not always quick. You know, the journey, if I had one thing to say, the journey is the destination. And that
while you're in the grind,
the
destination.
And I'm a product of the same saying of like, enjoy it while you're going through it. You know, things are not always going to go your way, but being ready for that, I think, and this goes back into like where the drive comes from, accepting the fact things are not going to go your way, that there's going to be failures, that there's going to be embarrassment. I mean, you know, I'm on certain projects, they called me indirectly the village idiot. And the funny thing is, and I don't know where the story came from, but the village idiot was the guy that everybody thought was an idiot. But meanwhile, he's the guy running the village. And that's the funny thing is that egos, personalities, and understanding people, I didn't do any of this before. Like, you know, early on, I was the kid that had an ego. I was the kid that thought I knew everything. I was the kid that like, you know, I could do better than you, would do better than you. And like, now I just take a back seat and I'm just like, I study and I watch and I observe and I learn. And I want to be able to like, all of this forms my reality now, which makes me want to continue doing what I'm doing. Because before I didn't want to do that. You know, I was like, you know, oh, the judge is going to say this. Well, F that. I want to do it anyways. And if I didn't have my better half saying, Chris, like, this is your second chance. And so I remember walking into the probation office and saying, hey, I'm legal dealing now. I'm buying stuff from China and I'm selling it on the market, you know, and like, it was a joke, but it felt so good. Cause like, I don't have to watch my back now. Mm-hmm. And I don't condone every activity, but if it's used as a learning experience and it's a segment, you know, we're in segments or cycles or whatever you want to call them. Everything is a segment and a cycle and a step to like the next, the better, the, you know, what's the next version of you? What's the next cycle going to be? And that's what makes me want to keep going is I'm curious, like, what is the next one? You know, if something, that's the best thing about being an entrepreneur, I think, is like, if you don't like something, you can change it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have complete control.
You have complete control. You know, I mean, in for me, it was, there's going to be employees that you're locked into something and a disagreement with an employee. Well, guess what? cut, trim the fat, you know, and I know that that could be looked at as an adverse reaction, or I can get adverse reactions for that. Why sit in misery when you have the ability to change things fast? And so for me and my companies, I'm 100% owner on all 9 of my companies. I have a lot more than that, but 9 operating companies, I'm 100% owner, me and my wife, you know. And by being able to change and be quick and reiterate and do what I want to do, not do what I don't want to do, you know, do what's right in the industry, but also what's a little bit kind of like outlandish that gets us ahead. Those changes happen fast. You know, I want a website change, that's done in a week. I have the ability to do that, but that could be paid for if somebody didn't. I'm in real estate stuff with other people, and it's like, well, we should change this. We should do this. You know, we got to talk about this. And we're 5 months in and we're still talking about stuff.
Yeah.
And so that time, somebody else is going to do it a lot faster than 5 months, and they just beat us to the punch. You know, they just reiterated the next version of them. It's like a software update on the phone.
Yeah.
They update it to the next version a lot faster. If I'm updating faster than my competitors, I'm moving at a faster rate and things are going to be faster. I can go with the flow and, you know, feedback from customers, feedback from employees, feedback from staff. It all works to my favor. Whereas sometimes these corporations get so big, they don't want to be changing on a dime like that. There has to be a steady flow, but it becomes like, oh, we have to get the signatures for it. It has to go up to the board and it has to, you know, and meanwhile, you got competitor over here that's coming up out of nowhere. And they're like, whoa, where are they coming from? Well, they're reiterating and they're getting things done a lot faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, that, I mean, I totally agree with you on all that. It's that is the pro of being an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. is the control.
Yeah.
We just interviewed Alex Lovely. Mm-hmm. He talked a lot about needing partners. Right. Whereas you mentioned you have 9 other companies, 100% of how many other companies do you own? And I would assume you're probably partners on the rest of them.
I am.
Right.
And actually, it's funny that you say that, because Alex Lovely we're partners on many things, real estate and other. He is single-handedly the person teaching me how to be more relationship based. And, you know, it's interesting because, like I said back, you know, early in the interview, it's you go with what you know. And I've had so many losses that, like, I mean, from my dad to my brother to like best friends, I've really closed up. And part of, you know, it's interesting that I'm able to have a relationship with my wife and really, you know, be there for her. And have her be there for me. I mean, she puts up with a lot. I'm a difficult person. And I say that because as good as I am at communication, as good as I am at understanding and neurolinguistics, and I have a lot of training in that, formal communications training and not, you know, hard knock life, like, you know, the hard knocks of the streets and gangs and, you know, communication that a lot of people couldn't even pay to get. There's that relationship aspect that still lacks, and that, you know, it's the authentic relationship, not just what's the business relationship. And it's an even keel, because there's business and there's formalities and there has to be structure, where too much relationship, you can get into things that you can't get out. You can, you know, expectations can run wild, and if they're not mitigated, that can lead to something bad in business. And I would hope that, you know, the business side of me is also rubbing off on Alex as well. Not that he doesn't have that, just he's really relationship based, you know, and partner based, and I was not. And coming into real estate, I know that we're both in Robert's mastermind, and mm-hmm. having masterminds and being in the real estate really taught me, like, wow, we can do this. It's a team sport. And other than the quickness of coming to things, it's caveat, because having a team sport where there's team members on it, we can do things a lot faster than one person, raising capital a lot faster, executing on CapEx projects, things like that. There's things that can happen a lot faster. The decisions sometimes take longer because we have to be collective. But using that relationship and really having other partners, I am new to that. And I love it. I think that it's great. I would caution people early on about that because relationships in business are sometimes more inclusive than a marriage. You know, I mean, everybody heard the prenup. I call it a prenup of business. I've actually outlined, here's a set of questions that if you're going to form a business, and as a business consultant, that's why I have this, is a lot of people are like, hey, we want to get in the business. We want to do this and we want to do that. Well, let's manage expectations. Here's the prenup set of questions. I call it a prenup set of questions of like, let's learn more about each other. You know, what are you going to dedicate to this? How much resources, how much finances, how much time, your expertise is a skill. Are you putting that in or are you going to charge for that? How is that going to work? I mean, all of these are relevant because early on, it's easy to talk about, hey, what are we all going to get out of this? What's the big picture? What's all of that? But you have to talk about the risks. You have to talk about the what ifs. You know, what happens? And lawyers are going to eat this next statement up of what I'm saying right now. Is like, what happens when hits the fan? What happens when there's a disagreement? Because the contract and an agreement and things on paper, that is literally what we're talking about now on paper, so that later on when we disagree about it, we can revert back to it. And that shouldn't be overlooked. And so I'm changing. I'm getting a better person because of Alex, because he's really instilling relationships and, you know, he's relationship based. And that's 100% good because more of that needs to be in business. And it's like I said, there's a caveat there because time is the diminishing factor of things in business. You know, we want to build the relationship, but there's just not enough in-person time. There's not enough, let me get to know you time before this deal comes up or the contract has to be signed or something has to be executed. And so it's finding that balance in between all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's really cool. You talked about that out. You and Alex have two different things to bring to the table.
Yeah.
And that's probably why you guys make such great partners. Mm-hmm. Because you know this, he knows this. When you're together, it's perfect.
It is.
You know, that's the reason why, a husband and wife create such good relationship is because they both have stuff to offer. Mm-hmm. You know, like my wife, she's an amazing mother.
Yeah.
She's like, as soon as we had our daughter, she'd like, completely different person. She is a mother now.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I had never even seen this side of you. Mm-hmm. Right? It was incredible. Whereas as soon as I also held my daughter, I was like, I gotta get to freaking work.
Yeah.
It's like, I gotta get
that's
to work.
That's your driving motivator.
Yeah. It's really cool to see that, you know, a marriage is a lot like a business partnership.
Yeah.
And you have the prenup for the business partnership that's gonna keep you safe.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, it'd be a whole conversation for another time, but I almost went into business speaking on that topic. I almost went into business, you know, that 3-hour business that I took from logo to 10-page website, selling sanitizer dispensers and dispenser stands. It was a marketing case study because all ads were getting shut down. It was exploiting a sensitive topic. Like the news was like, oh, there's no product. There's no mask. There was a ton of product. I was selling, you know, millions of masks and gallons of sanitizer to Pepsi, to Walmart, it was out there.
Yeah.
It's just the normal channels of the Googles, the OfferUp, the eBay, the Craigslist. You had the Shopify, I had an entire Shopify store shut down because I was selling masks on there during that situation. Wow. And what I mean by this is like, I almost went in the business with these people. My ads did better. I had to get real creative with the ads, but we had a business. It started becoming sustainable. We were getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in orders at a time. And I had two partners that I said, look, you guys handle the staff, you handle the sales, and I handle the marketing. And I'll handle the fulfillment because I'm versed in bringing stuff over from China and all that backline. And everything was great. We talked about it. We're going to rule the world. Everything's perfect. And then we get a call. A whole nother situation. But we get a call from Kroger and they're like, we need 1,100 stands made in 2 weeks. We need 1,100 stands with us. And then we put in an order for 28,000. And I'm like, oh my, dude, all you got to tell me is I need this and this. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. So I said, okay, we went to a scrap yard. I looked at the scraps. I tack welded some together. I put a picture up. I said, hey, these are stands already selling online. You know, I had a bed sheet in the background. We hadn't sold any stands online. They said, cool, we want that. We want 1,100 of those in 2 weeks. And Thanksgiving was the next week. And I had just moved to Vegas. This is to show that, like, before you're thinking about, like, this is the epitome of, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I need to get 1,100 stands. And so I called three people, three bids. They're like, dude, you're crazy. You're nuts. Ain't happening. Now, my partner that I was going to go in the business with at the time, and I'll come back to this in a minute, he had sold them on, we can do the stands for $55 and like 60 cents. So now I'm locked into this price. It should have been $95 because I can't make a stand for $55 if I'm going to use somebody else. So now I'm pigeonholed into this scenario where I have to do this. We've committed to them. How do I make this work? Went to the scrap yard, welded these things together. Okay, how much is metal? How much if I order this? Okay, well, I know that we can weld these. I know if I provide an assembly line, now I need to find a warehouse. It just so happens the warehouse next to me, the guy was moving out. I rented that by the day from him while he moved out. Went on Craigslist, hired 15 welders, like 15 people to weld, got the machines, brought the people in, 15 welders welded for like 48, 96 hours straight, like round the clock welding. And this was an assembly line. I walked into the metal company and said, hey, I need this much metal. We want to make 1,100 stands. This guy's like, dude, you're nuts. And I'm like, I have to do this. He goes, it ain't happening, dude. He goes, I don't know what you're thinking of, but it ain't happening. He goes, I've been in this metal business 25 years. You are not going to be making 1,100. Do you understand how much 1,127, whatever odd number it was, stands is? And I go, yeah, it's a lot. I have to do this. I have to do it. He goes, well, we're closed for Thanksgiving. I go, okay, well, there's still, you know, it's Friday. Thanksgiving is next Thursday. There's still Monday and Tuesday. And he goes, buddy, he goes, I don't know what thing you got going on here. He goes, show up at my office Monday morning with like $80,000 cash or $50,000 cash, whatever it was cash. He goes, show up in my office in cash and I'll sell you the metal. He goes, the metal's right back here. But I want you to show up. I want to see if you're serious about this. But that was what he's saying. He goes, show up. And then we talk about it then. Monday morning, I show up, bam, drop the cash on his desk. And he goes, man, he goes, you're nuts. and he goes, I've worked in Vegas for X amount of years. He goes, you're a different breed, dude. He goes, I think, you know, you think that you're going to make this happen, but I'm going to sell you the metal. And he goes, I don't think you realize what you're getting into. And there's a little bit, like, I was scared. And I'm like, look, you know what? I don't care. Like, it's just, what do I need to do next? Where's my timeline? What do I need to do next? And if there's a piece of advice to give here, thinking about the whole process, yeah, I'm like, what if I fail? What if I do all this in Kroger? They've just committed. They haven't paid. Yeah. They just committed on paper. What if I don't deliver? Like, what if it's not there on that exact day? Like, all these what ifs, you know, I don't want to ask them because then it looks like I don't know what I'm doing. Like, so I just said, like they say, you can eat an elephant in bite-sized chunks. Everybody's heard that before. This is the epitome of that. Like, if I just do the next, hire the welders, the next, get the product. The stands were made too big. So now we had to ship these stands in these boxes where I could only get 16 of them to a pallet. Had I made the stand 5 inches shorter, I could have probably had, you know, 40 of them to a pallet or a lot more. Like, you know, so this is something I learned. Yeah. But yeah. Hey, I wasn't paying for the shipping. Kroger was paying for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and my neighbors thought I was crazy. So here we are, all the welding. I find somebody to do the painting. The defect rate on the painting was like 40%. It was ridiculous. They had guys in there that were like smoking meth and just out of control. Hey, they work 24 hours. But, you know, I guess
they got all the stands built.
They got the stands built. And so I had to step in and manage that process. Guys, let's go. Push me and my wife to the brink of like breaking up, you know, I mean, throwing my cell phone against the wall a couple of times. These people off Craigslist, they're not reliable. You know, some of them wanted their cash right when they're done working because they want to go buy drugs. Others are like, it's like corralling cats. moral of the story, we got it done. We got the pallets made. And here we have 96 pallets of stands sitting in front of my warehouse. I just moved into my warehouse a month and a half ago. Everybody in my warehouse district's like, what is this guy doing? Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
I call the trucks. Kroger says, oh, yeah, yeah. And by the way, we made it on time. The pallets were ready to be picked up the day before they shipped. Hey, as long as they're shipped, we fulfilled what we were supposed to do, right? The truck didn't, one of the trucks, we had two shipments. One of the trucks didn't get there for four more days later. So I had to pay a security guard to sit there. Funny that we're talking about security guards overnight to watch these.
Watch them
overnight. If it rained on, we would have been screwed. We would have had to repalletize everything. We ended up making, I think, like a dollar on each one of them. And then the 28,000 never went through because of the guy, like way the contract, I let him handle it. Case in point, and the whole point I'm sharing the story, there's many takeaways from this. These two people, when we were going into the project and I finally like got the warehouse, got the welders and said, okay, it's just, everything's calculable. Like, okay, if we're putting stickers on boxes and it takes 2 minutes to put stickers on boxes, I have 1,100 boxes. How many minutes if I have a team working nonstop? Just calculate it out. You know, I people work overnight nonstop. I had food delivered. I had like, I just, people became machines at that point. They signed up for it. They knew what they were signing up for, but that's how I calculated out. I didn't know what I was doing. And what happened was I talked to the two people that I was going to go into business with. And I said, I need help on this, guys. Can you please come out here? Oh, COVID's happening. I don't want to get on a plane, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Drive. Like, you know, we're going to be splitting
out here.
Get out here. This is huge. I'm like, look, if we're splitting, I think we ended up making like, I don't know. It was, we made a little bit more actually than a dollar a stand. I think it was like $2 or something like that. No, I can't remember. I think
$2 a stand.
Yeah, $2 or $3 a stand up front.
And you didn't get the 28,000.
We didn't get the 28,000. But even at that, like, even if we did get the 28,000, even if we didn't, you know, at that time, I think because there was another pending order, something happened there that we were going to be splitting $30,000, essentially. And so the order that was going to come in, we would have made $30,000 total, $10,000 to each one of us. $10,000 at that time, I would have drove across country. Like, I would have taken the time, I would have drove, I would have put in the work, not to mention this lingering $28,000, which is a couple of million dollars. And I got a no from one person because he didn't want to get on a plane. He didn't want to drive. I got a, oh, I have to help this other guy unload a shipping container that's going to be coming in. I'm like, wait, he didn't tell me anything about that. And it was just like, I can't this and that, right? Where I'm thinking, okay, well, the pedal hit the metal and these guys aren't here to help me. Like, what is that explain about the people that I'm about to go in the business with? Not to mention, in an email, I said, hey, we're going to go into a contract. Send me your contract first. They sent me a contract. It was a 2-page contract, and it had in there the word slush fund. I don't know what slush fund is at the time, but all I know is that doesn't sound like a very formal term or something that sounds like it's just money being slushed around. I'm like, this is not what's going to be in my contract. So I said, what do you guys want to see in a contract? They sent me a list of what they want to see in it. I went and paid a lawyer $4,000. She wrote up a 47-page contract. This is an operating agreement that we're going in the business with. I sent it to them and they laughed at it. They thought it was a joke. And I said, dude, I've had Disney contracts that were 96 pages. Like, these are the most in-depth contracts. They think of every angle. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can pay your subcontractor. Here's what they can pay. Here's the materials they have to source. I mean, they've seen it all. Mm-hmm. So I'm going off of what I know. I need to have a better than a 2-page contract. And they laughed at it. They said it was stupid. They wouldn't answer my questions in an email. And it got to a point where it's like 10 questions. Two of them get answered. Hey guys, there's 8 more that need to get answered. Another one or two would get answered, and it's pulling teeth. So red flag, these red. And what I'm explaining this is like somebody that's going through business, look for the red flags. Like when you're going to get in to becoming a partner or working with partners, like these red flags, they have telltale signs and they may not be blatantly obvious up front, but they're there. And they were screaming at me right in the face. And now we get to a point where I need help. Okay, this needs to get done. And then we have a whole series of stuff where we order, it comes in and it goes straight to Kroger. And where was everybody at when I needed help? And actually, one of the guys had the audacity to say, oh, well, you've got a wife. She can help you, right? Like, bro, my wife doesn't come for free. My wife's a premium. She's going to get paid. And I'm going to hire another friend that I have out here. And he's getting $50 an hour. So now we're sharing costs. Now you guys aren't making anything. And I was still willing to give them two thirds. And which, ironic enough, when we finished everything based on the payment and the numbers and how everything worked out, they actually owed me $5,000. Where was that $5,000 at? They didn't pay. So I cut the email accounts off. It became this whole, you know, discussion and, oh, are you mom and dad, are you going to cut this off? No, there's no more need for us to do business together. Like, I need you guys here. You're not helping. So this has to happen.
Yeah, we're done.
And then they were done. They ghost to the wind. No, nobody found. And I could tell you the relief of I finally stood up to the big bad monster, you know, and the big bad monster is a very difficult decision that you don't want to have to make. You know, it's fronting something head on. It's hitting the train right as it's moving towards you. People like running from these things, they only get worse. And for me, it got worse. You know, I saw the red flags, but I didn't confront it early on. And so then we get into the project and I saw the flags. It was the third day into the project. I was on 2 hours of sleep over 3 days. And you can imagine my state of mind's not there. I'm like kind of getting delusional. Like, oh my God, am I making the right decision? And I think ultimately using my resources at that time, like that's what pushed me over the edge. I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to go in and I'm going to make this work and I'm going to do what I feel is right. And that's trim the fat. Trim the fat, ended up working through it. To date, we still sell to Kroger. You know, it's a couple million dollars. And so that's something that they would have had if it would have worked out. But I share this as like people can go through the process with me so that they know, you know, how I felt, what the decisions I made. And for more so, something can be done. I mean, I walked into this not knowing anything and we completed it. The trucks, one truck picked it up 4 days late. The other truck picked it up 7 days late. And that truck, half the shipment got lost.
Oh my goodness.
Like five truckloads of pallets got lost. So case in point, it's still a success. But working with partners, bringing it back, Alex has taught me a lot on that. And he still does teach me a lot on that.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, thank you so much, man, for sharing your story on everything.
And yeah.
Is there anything else specifically you want to bring up?
I want to say the world's your oyster. You know, the world is a fish tank and a fish bowl as a world. And so somebody that has an idea, somebody that wants to do something, somebody that wants to change something, somebody that like has an aspiration, somebody that wants to follow their dreams, you know, your area that you're in, you're going to have to change that area because that area is a fishbowl. Your city is a fishbowl. Your city's in a state that's a bigger fishbowl. And that state is within a country that's a bigger fishbowl. That country, and you get the analogy from here. Me growing up in my hometown, I go back now, I can't talk to anybody. They're like, oh, it must be nice, dude. You know, everything must be great. You're lucky you got out. I'm not lucky. I drove. I got out. I found a way. I've met people that have come to Vegas or gone somewhere. They literally had $40 in their bank account and said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to spend this $40 in gas to drive across the state line to somewhere else and make it work. And those people, somebody like that, I would hire somebody like that than somebody that hasn't made it home. Because that person is coming from a survival mindset and that person is willing to take a risk.
They're going to grow. They're going to push.
And me coming out to Vegas just recently, I would not have met Alex. We would not be going into the stuff that we're doing. I would not have gotten this project, you know, which is the highlight. This is leading to many other projects. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing unless I left all my friends in San Diego.
Yeah.
And it's okay to do that, you know, because the friend group that you're with, and I'm talking from personal experience, the friend group that you're with, we were the youngest ones in our friend group. And our friend group was just complacent. Like, and not, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying, I didn't want that. I want more. Yeah. And I always want more. And I think everybody deserves more. And you can have more when you change whatever you need to change. Change your friend group, change your location, change your fishbowl. and get out of it, because a different area presents different opportunities. And it's actually an ability to start all over again, which is not a bad thing. You know, when you talk to somebody, and I've told this to so many people, it's like, you know, when I come out here, I'm new here. And so like this guy in the business, like, dude, you're nuts. Like that guy doesn't know me from anything. That guy only knows what comes out of my mouth and what's online. Mm-hmm. And so your social medias are a dictation of your life. And so keeping that in mind of like your story, again, relating it back to the story, your story is what's going to keep pushing you forward ahead. And if it's like, you know, I couldn't do this, I didn't want to do that. You know, I just talked to somebody the other day. Yeah, I took a sabbaticus for, you know, a whole 2 years and then did some, like, I don't even know what that is, but that doesn't sound like something that's conductive for, like, you know, success and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But knowing that, and it's okay to do that. You know, people are going to be on your case about it. Screw it. You know, this is your life. Don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
Take it and run with it.
Take the risk.
Yeah.
Get out of your fishbowl. Mm-hmm. Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Meet new people. Mm-hmm. And you're going to create the path that you want to create.
Correct.
But you have to get out of your own comfort.
You have to. And it's written on my computer screen, so I see it every day. Knowledge is potential power. Action is power. Because if you get the analysis paralysis, or you get in this mindset of like learning, action's the next step.
Action is the next step. Right now,
we're in this information age where I'm like, it's insane. Literally, if you want to learn something, there is somebody out there that has a course on it, or that's teaching it, or that's doing it. I'm not saying that it's 100% right, but that will fast track you to get what you want. Mm-hmm. And Alex Ramosi mentioned this many times. It's the skills that you're putting in a bag, skill stacking, you know, learn marketing, learn a little bit of business, learn enough about accounting that you don't have to do it. You don't have to be a CPA, but you know what to ask for when you get the right accountant.
Yeah.
You know, knowing enough to explain it and just stacking those skills that's why I'm addicted to learning. And I think everybody should.
Yeah. Create your knowledge to have big actions.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
I like it.
Cool, man.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chris.
Yes.
I appreciate you taking the time.
That was a lot.